Okay, so hi Yasmin, thanks for coming back today. How are you doing today?
I don't think I think I still feel the same. So yeah,
Yeah.
I'm here to talk. I just hope to talk to you about it, about my, my problems. Yeah.
Okay, so let me ask you before we kind of get into everything and kind of get into the admin of things. How's your past week been? How have things been since the last time I saw you?
I think everything is still the same. Like when I go home, I still feel like I feel really bad, and I just feel very irritable. Like I have no patience around like people and stuff. And yeah, and I just went back to drinking and like taking the benzo pill. Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like over the past week since the last time we spoke that your pattern of what you're using and what you're drinking has stayed the same. Would that be correct to say?
Yeah.
Okay, all right. And just to clarify, Yasmin, could you tell me in terms of each of those? So with the alcohol, let's start with the alcohol. What does that look like in the past week? What does your pattern of consumption look like at the moment?
Right, I have about like 15 to like around 20 standard drinks per week, and yeah, I thought that it's like one of the good way to escape and help me to like not think of anything, and yeah, so it's still the same pattern, like I just couldn't help but to drink, yeah.
Okay. So I noticed that you mentioned standard drinks. So it sounds like you're quite informed when it comes to what is a standard drink and what is not. Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. So just in terms of the guidelines, and do you know anything about that in terms of what would be an acceptable limit to have and what might not be?
Not really. Yeah, I know I shouldn't have that much, but I'm not quite sure like what's the, the acceptable standard drink I should like have.
Okay, so what we can do is once we start kind of setting the goals, which we'll do in a minute, I can maybe give you some information around, what are the medical guidelines, the Alcohol and Drug Foundation guidelines around what kind of good levels of alcohol intake would be. Would that be something that you'd be interested in?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, great. All right, so we've covered the alcohol. Tell me about the benzodiazepines in the past week or not even in the past week, just how you've been using them. I know last time you mentioned that you use them quite frequently, but could you
Yeah.
just tell me what a week's use or a day's use would look like at the moment for you?
Right, I used to have like 3 to 4 times per day, but I have increased like the number of it to like around 6 to 7 pills because I found that the previous usage wasn't as effective as it used to be, so I thought that increasing it would like help me to feel better.
Okay. And when you're saying you use 3 to 4 times a day, you're talking about using it in a tablet form?
Yes.
Okay. And how many milligrams would that be, do you think?
That was around 5 milligram.
Okay. So at the moment, we're using about 5 milligrams 6 to 7 times a day. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So that would be between 30 to 35 milligrams per day. Okay. All right, great. So in terms of, so we've kind of covered, in terms of your past week and everything, how your use has been, how you've been feeling. Could you tell me a little bit more about your emotions and your feelings over the past week? Can you give me a little bit more information around that?
Yes, so I my mom who keeps like my mom and my dad like have like I have a really like serious family problem, so they often like argue, and like sometimes my mom would just put it off on me, saying that I was the cause of their problem and stuff. So I feel really like really sad about like why do I have like a mom like this and stuff, and yeah, so I'll just take them to like escape whatever I've been through in the house. Yes, to to just shut myself off from them.
Okay, so yeah, it sounds like there's some difficulties with mom and dad at home, and it sounds like there might be some difficulties with those relationships, so maybe communicating with mom and dad and not being able to, I guess, say things you want to say and feeling sad about that and feeling really down and low.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So if you had to, I guess, I know last time you mentioned that you do feel, you know, you often feel down, you often feel low. Sometimes you feel a bit hopeless and you've got some feelings of worthlessness. On top of that, you describe having some symptoms of anxiety as well.
Yes.
I'm wondering if you had to rate that. So we'll start with the kind of feelings of low mood. If you had to rate that over the past week out of 10, so 0 being I'm feeling okay, I don't have any feelings of sadness or hopelessness, and 10 being I'm really feeling unlike myself, I'm feeling sad, I'm feeling low, all those things that you described, how would you rate that part over the past week?
I think I would rate that as an 8.
An 8 out of 10? Okay. And you did mention some anxiety symptoms last time. Is that something that's still posing some difficulties for you at the moment?
Yes, it still does.
Okay. And what does that look like for you, Yasmin, in terms of anxiety? When you think of yourself being anxious, what does that look like to you? How do you experience that?
I feel that I feel a lot of negativity.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it just affects, you know, like my decision making and stuff, like thinking, like I sometimes do experience panic attack as well. Yeah.
Okay. All right. And let me ask you this. How do you know when you're anxious and when you're panicked? Do you have any physical symptoms?
Yeah, like I have like, you know, racing heart, and I my palms are like really sweaty. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. And I'm going to ask you the same rating scale as before, just for the anxiety. And when you think of those symptoms and you think about yourself over the past week, how would you rate that today?
Today?
Yeah.
I think it's around the same, like 7 to 8. Yeah.
Okay. So both seem like they're quite elevated at this point. So it seems to me that you're experiencing quite high levels of both feeling really low and, you know, those feelings of sadness, but also those feelings of maybe being on edge and some of those somatic symptoms, you know, so the heart race, the sweatiness, not being able to bring yourself down to calm down. Would that be accurate?
Yeah.
Okay. So the reason I kind of just wanted to see how you were doing over the past week, Yasmin, was you've actually disclosed to me some information that I can attest to from your survey. So if you remember, we did a survey together last week, just to kind of collect some information around where you're currently at in your life.
Yeah.
And what you're telling me is actually aligning with the self-reported scores that you gave us last week. So if it's okay with you, I'd like to just go through that with you. And I guess for the bigger picture of today's session, we are trying to aim to see what we can do in terms of planning treatment for you. So effectively planning something that will be tailored to what you need, that will be specific to what you want to achieve.
Yeah.
So I guess having a bit of background information and looking at some of these results might give us a better indication of, you know, how we can set some goals and how we can make them measurable, and being able to achieve those goals and walking alongside you to help you do that. So if you're okay with me just going through those results with you and just having a chat about that, then we can start with that.
Yeah, that sounds good.
Great. Okay, so for the first one, it's called a PHQ-9, and basically it's a screener for depressive symptoms. So importantly, I just want you to realize that it's not a diagnostic tool. It's actually a screening tool to be able to just flag some risks of symptoms of depression. So those things you mentioned before, having that low mood, not being able to sleep, struggling with concentration, difficulty with mom and dad at home, Those things are all indicators for symptoms of depression. But importantly, on their own, it's not saying that you do have depression. But when we combine the factors of what you've talked about, it may give us an indication that there may be some difficulty there. So your score came back as a 24, which would probably be between the moderately severe to the severe range of experiencing symptoms of depression. Does that sound accurate to you? Do you think that that kind of aligns with what you scored today as an 8 out of 10?
Yes, I think it really does, because I'm feeling like pretty bad. Yeah.
So pretty kind of low, and maybe like you're a little bit stuck, you know, trying to be able to do things, but not quite finding the way to get there.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So that's quite a good reflection of, I guess, using what we call kind of objective data. So data that we can look at through a test, for example, and then also what you've told us. So that gives us a bit of an indication that there might be some difficulties with those depressive symptoms. The same, I guess, would account for the anxiety scale that we ran. So we ran the two kind of together. And your anxiety score from last week came back as a 21, which is also quite a high score. And yeah, like you said, the 8 out of 10 that you scored today kind of aligns with that as well. So I just wanted to go through those with you and maybe have, you know, you think about what that might mean for you as we go into the service plan. So what we call a service plan, kind of just a bit of a fancy word for a treatment plan, and being able to set you up to meet those goals that you want to. So have a think about that in terms of, you know, what it is, you know, in terms of the goals you'd like to set. But just coming back to those scores, I've got two that I thought were quite significant as well. The one is a screener for some trauma, and your screener actually came up as positive for some form of traumatic experience. So could you tell me a little bit more about that? Because I don't think we talked about that last time, and I was wondering if you'd feel comfortable maybe just briefly and broadly sharing with me what you've experienced.
Right. So when I was young, so when I was really young, when I was still a child, I've experienced, you know, like some kind of domestic violence at home. So my dad are often like drunk, and so he would come back and, you know, like hitting on me and my mom, and, you know, he said like really bad things about us, like saying such as like my mom like as a slut, and I'm like, you know, I'm just not like he doesn't like really see me as his daughter, like I was just, you know, an accident of, you know, their relationship, like it was just a one night stand between him and my mom, and my mom just got pregnant and they are forced to marry. I guess frequent, like, you know, physical and verbal abuse from my dad, and my mom don't really like, you know, talk to me with, you know, my feelings and all. She thought that we should just, you know, be quiet and just obey whatever my dad says.
Okay, so that, I mean, I can, first of all, I can imagine that that was quite something to experience as a young kid, and it would make sense for you to be experiencing some form of a depressive or anxious symptoms. You can imagine why that would be, growing up in a household and, you know, currently being in a household with the same parents. I can imagine that that might be a difficult spot for you to be in. Okay, so perhaps, you know, we can look at some of those things when we start doing the planning. Is that something that you think you'd want to look at? Do you feel like it has an impact on where you're at today?
I think we should look at it, because yeah, it's kind of like affecting me, but I know it's difficult to like, you know, it's still difficult to look at it because I'm like dealing with them every day in my house.
Yeah.
Yeah, but so, I think we should do that.
Yeah, so just to clarify, Yasmin, you're still currently living with mom and dad at the moment?
Yeah, because I have nowhere to live because, you know, I got fired from my job due to, you know, the high dependency on benzos and stuff. Yep. So I have no choice but, you know, to live in that house.
Okay, so maybe we could look at some strategies around, you know, how to help you manage that. And that would probably depend on, I guess, what's most important at the moment. And yeah. I think, you know, I'd like to emphasize that as well, is that, you know, sometimes we have a lot of things that are going on and we try and make big plans. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's better to focus on the things that are most difficult for us at this point. So what we'll do is we'll work through that systematically and see what might work best for you to be able to manage what you'd like to do going forward.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay, great. And then one last thing for the results, Yasmin, you scored a 20% on the confidence scale. So just to remind you of that, the question asked you how confident you might be to keep yourself safe while using. Okay. And you scored a 20% for that one, which is, I'm not really confident at all. So I just wanted to find out a bit from you why you think you scored that low, and what might be the, I guess, the situation around that confidence being so low.
Because I don't know, if I don't use them, I feel that, you know, I just couldn't take everything. Like I feel really bad, and I have constant panic attack. Yeah. And my friends would also offer me to have them. Like yeah. Whenever I try to talk to them about my problems, they would be just, you know, say, ask me to have the pill because it's like a magic pill. It will help me to take my problems away and stuff, and they wouldn't like really wanted to like talk to me, talk me through my problems. So yeah, I think it's kind of difficult to, you know, to not use them and like in my situation, because yeah, I don't feel any, like I don't have any support besides, you know, these drugs. Yeah.
Okay, so I think what I'll ask you first, Yasmin, is you told me before that you used to use alcohol before. Is that right? Yeah. So you used to use that before you got prescribed the benzodiazepines.
Yeah.
After which you switched over, and that kind of became the primary substance of choice.
Yes.
But you also told me that you're still continuing to have alcohol. And you told me that earlier when I kind of checked in, you know, how the past week went. So in terms of, I guess, some knowledge around how alcohol and benzodiazepines work together, do you have any kind of information or I guess kind of ideas on how they work together from your own experience? I mean, do you use them together? What does that pattern of, I guess, the use of the alcohol and the use of the benzodiazepines look like?
Right. So I usually use them, like I use alcohol before the benzos and, you know, to get like, you know, a more instant effect on them, of them, to like, you know, to make me feel better, like faster, like whenever I feel like, you know, when I'm in a really extremely stressed mood that I couldn't take anything at all, then I would use them together. If not, I would just, you know, use the pill. Yeah. But okay, sometimes, so, like, my friends invited me over to have some party, so we would, like, also have both together. Yeah.
Okay, so it sounds like if we had to look at a week or a daily pattern of how you kind of consume the alcohol, use the benzo, it sounds like it's, you would use it depending on the situation. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so just to clarify, it's not a continuous routine of use. It's just used as you need it.
Yeah, most situation, I guess, most of it. Yeah. But
okay, so
I occasionally still use like both of them when, you know, I'm not feeling well, but not until, you know, when I'm not that worse, but I still use it. So I don't know, like I still use it anyway. Yeah.
Okay. So you would still use both daily. Is that right? Is that fair to say that you would still at some point in a day, you would use both?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, Yasmin. So I just wanted to check in with you in terms of, I guess, when we look at alcohol and benzodiazepines, there is quite a high risk when it comes to using those two together. So before we kind of get into the goal setting, which I do really want to jump on, I just want to make sure that you understand what some of the harmful effects or some of the more adverse effects of using the two together might be. So I'll start by asking, because you do know yourself best and you do know how, you know, your body works and what your pattern of consumption and use looks like. So I'll start by asking you, do you know much about how the two interact with each other, or have you had some, you know, physical effects where you can tell me about how you experience using them together?
I'm not quite sure about that. I just, you know, feel like I just feel really good when I use them both together. So maybe you can tell me more about that.
Okay. And from what you told me, you said that you would use the alcohol before the benzo because it would, I guess, get that feeling much quicker where you feel more relaxed and chilled out, and it happens quite quickly. Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. So are you okay for me to give you some examples of the effects that they might have together?
Yeah, sure.
Great. Okay. So as we know, or as is, you know, kind of in the guidelines, is that both alcohol and benzodiazepines are what we call depressants. Okay. Mm-hmm. So what each of them does is in your central nervous system, so basically the nervous system that keeps your body running, and that, I guess, you know, controls both autonomic and, you know, guided kind of movements, both of those have an effect on that system. So they tend to depress the effects of those systems. So that's kind of where that mellowed out, nice feeling comes from. It's almost like you're floating, or it's very much dampening the effects of how your body works. The problem with that is that it can really suppress quite important functions in your body, specifically breathing. So on their own, alcohol already does that pretty well, and so do benzodiazepines. So you get a whole bunch of benzodiazepines that kind of target different functions, but the idea is to get your muscles relaxed. The idea is to you know, give you that feeling of calm and to just, you know, sometimes bring those levels of anxiety or stress down. Mm-hmm. So I guess used in the right combination, not together, but if you had to use a prescribed benzo, which it sounds like you did, it can actually have quite a good effect on being able to bring your system down and to help you relax. But when you're using them together, the biggest worry and the biggest, I guess, kind of risk is that using alcohol and a benzo together, they actually enhance each other's effects. So basically what that means is that whatever alcohol or a benzo is already doing on its own for you is doubled. So that effect of suppression, so bringing down your system, is actually doubled when you use them together. So they actually work off of each other. And even if you use a low dose, let's say you use one pill with a half a standard drink, the risk is actually, it's exponential, because it doesn't matter how low the dose is, because they kind of push each other up, the risk of depressing your system and specifically your breathing is much higher. Mm-hmm. So that's one risk, I guess, of using them together. So what you told me in terms of how much you do use, so we're looking at 15 to 20 standard drinks per week. We could probably break that down into maybe 3 standard drinks a day, which according to guidelines, so if we look at GP guidelines and medical guidelines, the ultimate maximum limit for healthy men and women is about 4 standard drinks per day. So it would seem that you might be bordering on, I guess, that limit. But the problem is when we're using 30 to 35 milligrams of benzos per day and we're using it with at least 3 standard drinks, it is quite a high level. And it is quite a dangerous level, I guess, to be at when you think about, you know, you might not be able to wake up, or, you know, there might be a chance where you actually stop breathing. And that's where the risk of, I guess, overdose comes in as well. So I was wondering, you know, knowing that, how do you feel about that information, knowing that and knowing, I guess, those potential risks? Have you ever been told about that or?
No, because, you know, like, I thought that, you know, I was still like kind of young. So I thought that, you know, it's going to be fine. I know there's like a risk in it, but I just want to feel like good. So I didn't care too much. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And I suppose, I mean, if we look at, I guess, you know, benzos and alcohol do have some cognitive effects as well. So they can affect the way we think and the way we plan and the way we process things. So it might also be that, you know, the effect itself, you know, because it feels good and you don't really have to think much, that you might not have thought about it before. But I wonder if it's just good for you to know these things to maybe consider, you know, what your goals might be for your use going forward. So is that something you think you might want to look at in terms of your goal setting?
Yeah, definitely. Like, yeah, I hope to like reduce them, like gradually reduce. Yeah.
Great. Okay. And that's something I'd like to emphasize as well. You know, at Lives of Well, specifically with our counselors here, we really try to work alongside what your goals are. We're not abstinence-based. So if your goal, which you've just mentioned, is to gradually reduce, then that's something we can work alongside. And what you've mentioned is actually probably a safer way to do it. So if you're looking at reduction, that would involve probably some other health professionals besides myself to be able to help you do that. So it sounds like you are able to think about these things, and it does sound like you have a plan. So if you're okay, then we can start setting some of those goals. What do you think?
Yeah, sure. We can just do it now.
Great. Perfect. All right. So I'm just going to start with the first section, which is really just kind of an overview. So I know we've talked about it and we've had some discussions around it, but I just want to hear from you again, Yasmin, your main reason for accessing Lives Live Well services. If you could just briefly tell me about that.
I know that Lives Live Well provide service for, you know, like alcohol and drugs dependency, which I think suits my situation the most, because I use alcohol and benzos heavily. So when I read through the services, like, you guys have many, like, you know, have rehab and stuff, so and I thought that it might be a good choice to, you know, to approach you guys to talk about my problems and help me to kind of get through with it.
Okay, so it sounds like you've done some homework around Lives of Well, which is really good, because it's giving you, you know, different options. I know you mentioned rehab. In terms of being here today, do you think that going into rehab might be a better option for you, or do you think you'd want to stick to one-on-one counseling for the moment? What do you think might be more suitable for you?
I think counseling first, because I don't know, like, I just need like someone to talk to, since like you know, my family and friends, like, they don't give me that support.
Okay. All right. So just to kind of talk through I guess things that you're struggling with, and I guess at the same time being able to look at some of those anxiety, depressive symptoms maybe, and you mentioned cutting back on your use. So Do you think one of the reasons you might have accessed was, I guess, just to gain support around your use, but also your mental health? Would that be something that you want to look at for both of those?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. All right. So those are quite broad. I mean, if we think about mental health and we think about your use, mm-hmm. that's a good broad goal for us to look at. So if we think about the use to begin with, so we're thinking about the benzos, we're thinking about the alcohol, and you mentioned that you'd like to reduce that intake. Okay.
Yeah.
So we'll start with that one. We'll break it up into two. So we'll start with the first one just to make it a bit easier. Mm-hmm. What do you think might be some of the things that will get in the way of you being able to cut back? So something that might stop you from actually being able to say, I don't want to use as much.
All right. So when I tried reduce, like to use them, I felt like extra worse than before.
Yep.
And I tried to do things to distract myself, such as, you know, like studying or just going out for a walk, but it just doesn't help. And my friends who will also offer me like those pills, it's hard to reject them because I've been friends with them since, you know, I was really young. I partied with them and I think they're my only friends. So it would make me look bad if I just reject, you know, their offer for like, you know, when they say that they're trying to help me out, but I reject it. If I reject the help, then I think they would think really bad of me. Yeah. So, and you know, like in family, my house, I don't feel like I have a home and stuff. So yeah, I just can't help myself but, you know, to take it.
Okay, so it sounds like there's quite a bit, you know, that might hold you back, you know, in terms of not wanting to, I guess, let go of a group of people that you've known for a while that, you know, might be supportive and that might offer you, I guess, some shelter from the storm at home. You said you've been friends with them for a while. Okay, so it sounds like, you know, a lot of this might be looking at trying to feel safe again and trying to be able to manage feeling safe in your own space and just having that kind of support. Would that be accurate to say?
Yes, it's accurate.
Okay, great. So you've actually mentioned a few of the functions of, you know, why you would use, which make total sense. So those are probably the things that we might target in terms of going forward with treatment and looking at some strategies around how we would be able to do that. Okay, great. Okay, so that's around the alcohol and the drug. So the alcohol and the benzos. What about some of that mental health stuff you mentioned? So we're looking at some of that trauma that you mentioned that seems to be a bit ongoing at the moment. And you also mentioned some of those depressive and anxiety symptoms. Do you think that, you know, actually not do you think, if we look at that being one of your main goals, so the reason why you access Lives of Well, what do you think might get in the way of you being able to feel like your mental health is in a place where you feel good? What do you think might stop that?
Sorry, can you repeat?
No problem. I know these sessions are quite a lot to think about. We really dig deep with it. Okay, so for the first one, so we've got your main kind of reason why you've accessed Lives of Well. So it's to gain support around the mental health, right? So the anxiety, some of those depressive symptoms, and then we've got the AOD. So with the AOD, which stands for alcohol and drug, you mentioned the withdrawal's quite bad. That's going to stop you from cutting back. Being rejected by your friends might stop you. And feeling unsafe at home.
Yep.
Okay. So in terms of the, I guess, managing the anxiety, the depression, or the symptoms of anxiety and depression rather, what do you think might make it difficult for you to be able to, you know, get to that goal where you feel good and you don't feel low and you don't feel stressed? I can give you an example which you've mentioned. One of them might be you're living in an environment where you're constantly stressed. That might be one of the reasons that might make it difficult for you. Is there anything else you can think of that, you know, might keep your mood low, that might keep you anxious? Think about the things that keep you that way. What are some of the things that keep you, you know, anxious all the time or feeling low all the time?
Yeah, I think probably like I want to be financially independent because I don't get, you know, support from my family. But yep. Now, like, I got fired from my part-time job.
Yeah.
And yeah, I just don't know what to do. Yeah.
Okay. So it sounds like the unemployment could be a big one at this point in terms of of keeping you stuck and, you know, feeling low and making you stressed out and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Would that be accurate to say?
Yes.
Okay, great. All right. So I think those are two good ones to work with. I think that's probably a good place to start. And just to let you know, Yasmin, with the service plan or the treatment plan, we check in with that at least every 2 weeks. So we kind of, when we do treatment or we do some counseling, we really look back on the goals that we have set. And we really do try and stay in line with what you've set and with what you'd like to achieve. So it can change. It doesn't have to stay the same. You know, if you come to us next week and you decide that you'd like to add a goal, then we can add a goal and we can work on that and see where you're at.
Yep, that sounds good.
Great. Okay, so the next section, Yasmin, is a continuing care plan. So basically that's just how are we going to maintain support for you? Right. And I suppose one that we can add is to continue counseling. Is that something you think would be helpful if you stay engaged with us?
Yeah, I think it would be really helpful for that. Yeah.
Okay. And in terms of the, I know you said you'd like to reduce on, was it both the alcohol and the benzos, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So just a bit of quick information in terms of, I guess, how to do that, or maybe, you know, you can decide how you'd like to manage that. Is really staying in contact with your GP and being able to talk to your GP about using both together. GPs would really be able to help you manage to kind of wean off of those slowly, depending on how you'd want to do it. But I think, and tell me what you think about it, but I think alongside the counseling, being able to manage that in a very safe and controlled environment, like with a GP, would probably be one of the safer recommendations. So what do you think about that? Do you think that's something that you'd want to try out?
Yeah, I think I would try that out.
Okay. Do you have a GP at the moment, Yasmin, that you see on the regular?
Not really, because I went to the GP just to get, you know, prescribed for benzo, so I kind of like jump around with different GPs.
Okay. All right. So how would you feel about getting more of a set GP, someone that you could, I guess, learn to trust and build a relationship with, and someone that can help you through, I guess, the journey of cutting down?
Yeah, that would be good. Yeah, I think okay. I would willing to try that out.
Okay, great. So maybe we can work that into some of your goals there.
Yeah.
Okay, so just to clarify, we've got the things that might get in the way, which is those withdrawal symptoms, being rejected by friends, feeling unsafe. And then at the moment with the mental health, it's probably living in an environment that's also not safe, but also some of that unemployment that is causing some stress there. Okay.
Yeah.
So if we look at some individual goals, so the things that are getting in your way, one is the withdrawal. Okay, so why don't we start there? Okay, so the withdrawal seems like it's the biggest one. So tell me a bit about the withdrawal. What does that feel like? And why is that a problem?
You know, when I stop, I feel extra worse, and I even like, you know, I have to vomit like constantly. I don't know, like I think that's the withdrawal symptoms. And yeah, I just feel extra tense and stuff that, you know, I couldn't I feel really easily irritated when someone, yeah. you know, like even someone asks me like a really simple question, I will feel irritated and, you know, I just get out of control from my, you know, my emotions and all.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay. And yeah. And I wonder if, you know, you said that there's some difficulties with those interpersonal relationships as well. Do you think that when you withdraw, it might make it even more difficult for you to be able to try and talk to people and there's, you know, some irritation that's happening there? That's inaccurate?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, so you mentioned, I guess, cutting back, and I think part of what that's going to look like is managing the actual withdrawal from either the alcohol or the benzos. Yeah. And that's not something that I can attest to at the moment. That's something that your GP would be able to walk through with you. Mm-hmm. But in any case, if you are looking at withdrawing from both, that would probably have to be managed. So I think you already mentioned, you already said that the goal you'd like to achieve is to just be able to cut back, right? So to be able to use less, okay?
Yeah.
And what does that look like to you in terms of using less, Yasmin? What would be, and I suppose you'd have to talk to your GP about it. We wouldn't want you doing it on your own. But maybe not in terms of the quantity, but how would you feel? What would be different if you chose to cut back? Do you think it would improve your mood? Do you think you'd feel better physically? What do you think might change?
I think in short term, I think it would do worse. And I think that's the most difficult part of it because, you know, I would feel like extra worse and stuff, like not as good as, you know, when I use that. When I use the high amount of those.
Yeah.
But yeah, I understand that that's something that I have to go through, like if I really want to achieve that. Yeah. So I think that's what it's gonna be like. I think I'm gonna feel worse in a short while.
Yeah. Okay. But it does sound like you know, you understand the benefits but also some of what might be difficult.
Yes.
But it does sound like you are prepared to go through that,
yes.
And which is a good place to start. I don't think withdrawal is ever easy, but you know, if you have someone like your GP helping you to kind of manage that detox for you, and they do it really well. I mean, they have facilities; they are able to assist you in doing that. So if you're looking at, I guess, cutting back and feeling better, then that's something that we can talk to your GP about. Does that sound okay?
Yep, that sounds good.
Great. Okay, so how will we work together? Get in contact with the GP. I think we just mentioned that one.
Yep.
We'll put that on there for you. Yeah, so maybe I'll hand that one over to you, Yasmin, is to just see if you can maybe ask around and find some information around, you know, getting a new GP. Do you think you'd be able to do that, or is that something you might need my help with?
I'll try to do that, but if I can do, if I have any problem with that, maybe can I contact you?
Of course you can. Yeah, we can definitely do that. We can try and get in contact with some people that we might know or some recommended GPs in your area. We can definitely do that together. What would you think about the possibility of your GP and I working alongside each other? Is that something that you'd feel comfortable with, your GP and I having a chat about your progress, or what do you think about that?
Yeah, I think it sounds good, you know, like for you guys to know like what's my condition, like to help me to get through this. Yeah, so yeah, I think it's fine.
Okay. All right. And when we do get to that point, we'll just we'll have another talk about, you know, just how we disclose information. We'll have a chat about what you're comfortable with us knowing and with us sharing. So don't worry about that. We will have a talk about that before we actually do get in contact with the GP. Okay. So who will do what? So we've kind of talked about that. You're okay to look for a GP for now, and if something get stuck a little bit, you and I will just have a chat maybe in the next session to see how you're doing. And then we'll go from there with the GP. Okay.
Yeah.
Great. So that's great. That's the one goal for the withdrawal. Okay. When we look at the, I guess what we can do, Yasmin, just to being mindful of our session and our time in session, what we could do as well, you mentioned here being rejected by friends, that might make you look bad. You know, that might make you feel, I guess, not part of a group. That can maybe tie into some of that mental health stuff you mentioned. So when you look at, I guess, your friend group and being part of a group, how do you think you would feel if you were rejected? And if, you know, people were to say to you, you don't want to use a benzo or alcohol, so we don't want to be your friend. What do you think that might do to you and how that might make you feel?
I think it would make me feel like lonely because, you know, I don't like without them, like I literally have like no more any support with me. Yeah. So I'm
okay. And do you think that ties into you feeling anxious sometimes or maybe feeling those symptoms of depression?
Yeah, I think it does.
Okay. Do you think if we put that as a goal, so being able to manage those symptoms of anxiety and depression, do you think that's something that you would want to do ongoing in treatment? Do you think that might benefit you, I guess, understanding a little bit about your feelings and your thoughts to be able to help you understand what the benzos and the alcohol might do for you that's good?
Yeah, I think it will help me too. Yeah.
Okay. All right, so if we're looking at the, I guess, the anxiety, the depression, what do you think would be helpful for you? What do you think you might need to make you feel better?
I guess, again, social support, which I don't think I really have it now.
Yeah.
And, you know, maybe like trying to get another job.
Yep.
Yeah, I think that would really help me.
Okay, so we can maybe tie employment into that as well.
Yes.
Okay, so gaining some meaningful employment.
Yep.
Okay. So I noticed that you mentioned, you know, you've got some, I guess, feelings and thoughts that you mentioned before where you said you might feel, you know, like you're not part of a group or it might make you look bad. You also mentioned before that, you know, dad used to say things to you that might, you know, maybe made you feel like you're not part of the family or, you know, you're not worth being part of the family. Do you think those, I guess, affect you at all in terms of how you use? So do you often think about these things? Do you often, do they go through your mind at all?
Yeah, so like, you know, I don't feel safe at home, so, and I don't want to deal with those feelings. So I thought that, you know, using those benzos will really help me to escape them. And, you know, it's like a magic pill. Yeah, I feel that it's like a magic pill, you know, it just makes my worries to like, you know, disappear. Yeah.
And does it actually work for you, Yasmin? Do you actually get that relief and does it last?
Yeah, it does work for me. Yeah.
Okay. And how do you feel when you come, you know, when the benzo or the alcohol is kind of worked out of your system? Do you still feel relaxed or do you think your anxiety is worse or the same?
Like when I use it, I think I feel much more better. Yeah, but when I'm sober, I think I feel like way worse than before I use it. Yeah, so it's kind of like an extreme thing for me.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like struggle with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's almost like needing the next one to be able to not have all those thoughts and feelings kind of come flooding back.
Yes.
Okay. So do you think, I mean, tell me how you feel about it. Do you think that by maybe working through some of those thoughts and those feelings and maybe some of those past traumas that you had, I guess looking at ways to really manage those things practically, do you think that's something that that we could look at to help you get to your goal of feeling good, being able to cut down, understanding how your thoughts and emotions work in terms of keeping you safe?
Yeah, I think it would be really helpful. Yeah.
Okay. And which one do you think at this point bothers you the most in terms of feeling really down or feeling really anxious? Are they the same? Is there one that stands out more to you?
I think it's kind of same. Yeah, I think it would be the anxiousness. Yeah, so
the anxiousness. Okay. Yeah. So kind of being able to manage that anxiety maybe some of those physical symptoms you're feeling.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So that's great. Thanks, Yasmin. The next section is how will we work together? So what I was thinking in terms of, I guess, if we're looking at trying to help out with both the depressive symptoms and the anxiety, I don't know if you've heard of the treatment called CBT. Basically stands for cognitive behavioral therapy. Have you ever heard of that before?
No, I haven't heard that before. Yeah.
Okay, so just very briefly and very kind of basically, you know, CBT looks at how we can understand our thoughts and emotions and our feelings, and how that actually impacts how we respond to certain situations. Okay, so I'll give you an example. You might have a situation where you go to a party and your friends offer you some benzos or some alcohol, but you're in a process where you're trying to detox. Okay, so in your mind, you say, oh, I don't really want to do this, but I don't know how to say no. If I say no, my friends will think that I am not a good friend, or I am useless, or I am whatever. Goes from situation, friends offering you the substance, goes to you having a thought, if I don't do this, I am a bad friend, for example. It might bring in a feeling. So a feeling could be anything from sad to irritated to angry, frustrated. You could be having a feeling, let's say, of sadness. And then the ultimate action is you end up using, or you end up doing, you know, going against your goal.
Yeah.
Because you've had this thought. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does make sense to me.
Yeah. So you have a situation, you have a thought, it makes you feel a certain way. Usually it's not that great. You kind of feel not too good. And that ends up, I guess, in a situation where you might be compromising your goals. Okay.
Yeah.
So that being said, when we look at anxiety and depressive symptoms, CBT really is one of the treatments that are really good to try and work through those things. And if you're looking specifically at anxiety, there's a few strategies that we can go through, and I guess I can get some of your feedback on how that works for you. But do you think that might be something that you could, I guess, relate to and that you might find helpful going forward?
Yeah, definitely, because, you know, I had like problems with these thoughts and stuff. So I think it would be really helpful for me to have that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was wondering, you know, we talk about techniques like what we call grounding and mindfulness. And very simply, you mentioned to me before that you experienced some physical symptoms of anxiety.
Yeah.
And one of the ways we can help you or try to help you to calm your system down a little bit is to just teach you some very basic breathing techniques. And trying to help you understand how that process works. So if you're okay to look at that, we can discuss that in the next session. And I can give you some more information around that.
Yeah.
Great. Okay. And then I suppose the last one here that you've mentioned, Yasmin, was that unemployment. That seems like it might be a big one. That might get in the way. Okay, so what have you tried in terms of I guess unemployment at the moment? Have you applied for some jobs? Have you you know, sought some help from an employment service? What have you done up until now that you think might have been helpful?
Yeah, I tried to applying, but, you know, I got rejected because, you know, of my dependency.
Yeah,
so it's been really tough. Like, yeah, I tried, but, you know, it just failed. Yeah.
Okay, so you have tried to apply, and people just, it seems like, haven't been able to give you that opportunity because of, I guess, the substance use and that kind of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay. All right, so, I mean, what we could do is kind of help connect you with some employment services that we do work with and that work alongside us. That might be able to give you some tips on, you know, CV writing, how to make your skills look the way they're supposed to in the format that workers want to look at it. We can connect you with some of those services to begin with if you'd like. Do you think that's something that we could do together just for the time being?
Yes, I think that sounds really good.
All right, great. And I'm wondering if we that could be one option. The other option is there are organizations that offer individuals who might struggle with substance use or, you know, have had difficult life circumstances, who do offer, you know, some traineeships or internships in different areas of work. It could really be anything. I suppose we could offer that as well. There's a whole range of, I guess, things that we could give you. I've got some brochures. I've got some contacts. Maybe we can look at that in the next session, if that's all right with you.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah.
Perfect. Okay. Well, I think we've got a few good goals to start with. Yasmin, what do you think?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's been a really productive session.
Great.
Yeah, and thank you.
And I think, you know, in terms of making sure that the goals are, you know, they're realistic and you can actually achieve those, I think we've got a good place to start. And just to summarize, we've looked at some of the goals being looking at targeting that unemployment, looking at being able to help manage your withdrawal with the GP and to be able to walk alongside the GP. But we've also got managing those symptoms of low mood and anxiety. And you and I would probably, that's probably the one we'd work on the most together, is maybe just understanding a bit of, you know, how we can go forward with that. And there's what I was thinking maybe for the next section and next session was to do a bit of a timeline and just to get a bit of an idea maybe where this might have started for you, you know, what you've been doing well. So to give us a bit of a bit more of a detailed history of where you've been and maybe being able to recognize some patterns in the past that one might be keeping you stuck today, but two might also help us to work on some of the things you do really well and to help you gain a bit more of that confidence and capability. Because you are showing insight, you are showing me that, you know, you want to get the ball rolling. And I think I just wanted to acknowledge that you've taken the first step today.
Yeah.
And just to thank you for being here today and for having the courage to share your story and to allow me to walk this path with you.
Thank you. Thank you so much, May.
Great. Well, I think if there's nothing else, Yasmin, I think we've got a whole bunch to work with and we'll kind of refine it as we go. But if there's nothing else today and you're happy with kind of the road that we're on, then we can just book an appointment for next session and we'll get into some of the more finer details next week. Does that sound all right?
Yeah, I think that sounds good. Thank you
Great.
So much.
Great. Perfect. Thanks, Yasmin. We'll book that appointment for you and then we'll see you next week.
Yep, thank you. See ya.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.